The Spinoff Podcast Network. Ready to rediscover the joys of cycling? With over 300 kilometres of cycle paths across Tāmaki Makaurau, jumping on your bike and going for a ride is such a fun way to discover the city from a different perspective. Cycling is getting more and more popular across Auckland, so now's a great time to join the hype and give cycling a go. Head to at.govt/cycling to find your nearest cycleway today.
Are you making the most of your KiwiSaver investment? Generate is an award-winning KiwiSaver provider with a track record of strong long-term performance. Making a smart decision now could add tens of thousands of dollars by the time you reach retirement. Book a no-obligation chat with a Generate KiwiSaver advisor today at generatekiwisaver.co.nz/getadvice. A copy of the product disclosure statement is available at generatekiwisaver.co.nz. The issuer of the scheme is Generate Investment Management Limited, and of course, past performance does not guarantee future returns.
You're on The Offspin. My name is Alex Bray, and I'm sitting with an incredibly strong cup of coffee at the moment after the first proper day of being up overnight for the World Test Championship final. I'm joined today by a podcast producer, guitarist for the Beths, civic infrastructure enthusiast, a man with fantastic hair as well, Jonathan Pierce. Welcome.
Thanks, Alex.
It's actually really great to have you in on this podcast properly. You're replacing Simon Day, of course. But I kind of feel like you've got this opportunity to come in and sort of sit in one of the lead chairs on the podcast, in part because you corrected one of Simon's facts live during a show.
Oh, my heart goes out to Simon. I think he's gone and had a birthday during the World Test Championship final. And, all my sympathies go to him. And, I'll be here attempting to come up with correct facts.
Yeah. No, I've got a brain full of mush at the moment, so I think I'll be saying some things that are quite wrong. Just quickly as well, this podcast brought to you by The Bear Spot. They've got 5 locations across Auckland. They pour about 40 beers on tap or something like that, and they have a rotating selection, rotating food trucks. It's really nice. We go to the Morningside one. So thank you to The Bear Spot. Right, so where are we at in this game of cricket? We had everything last night, didn't we? We had a bit of rain, we had bad light, we had depressing English crowds. You know, what a perfect day of Test cricket.
How many were there in the crowd yesterday?
I think 4,000 is what they're allowed under COVID restrictions. So 4,000 a day, so it looks reasonably sparse.
Just the build-up has been so dreary.
Mm.
It has been endless tweet streams of people posting just how dreary and awful Southampton looks right now.
It looks like shit, doesn't it? It really does.
And it has dashed my expectations.
Of what, Southampton generally?
Of this event.
Oh, yeah. I mean, 4,000 people at Lord's would have just been a very different prospect. There is something about having an event like this at a time of global history like this, which is just, you know, there was always going to have to be some sort of compromise or acknowledgement of the circumstances in which they're playing it. But yeah, the fact that they're playing for what looks like it's a giant golden meth pipe, the fact that it just...
Hilariously, they could have moved it to New Zealand or Australia
with
the weather that's been going on and had a real gala event of it. And there would have been a spectacular amount of Indian fans.
It would have been. Anywhere in the world, really.
Yes.
They could have played it in America. Currently, California is having a once in 1,200 years heat wave. You know, they could have played it there instead, maybe.
Stunning.
But
what would a pitch be like in California?
Probably shitty, but they
probably
play
pretty
a lot of,
Indian. I reckon could become a dust
potentially,
bowl.
Yeah,
it's not a lot of water. A lot of heat. A lot of sun, burning sun. Not necessarily burning sun, but hot
sun. It would be. It actually would probably break up quite quickly and be very conducive to spin. And I think as well, given that cricket in the USA is largely an expat sport, you know, very large Indian, Pakistani, Bangladeshi communities there who are keeping the game alive. Some West Indian people from the various countries that make up the West Indies as well play there as well, I think. But you'd have to imagine that there would be a pretty healthy spin culture.
My experience of cricket in America is that of the cultural exchange between the Beths and America, which is that when we tour America, we take a cricket bat.
Nice.
And we eagerly teach any Americans we meet to play and appreciate cricket.
That's awesome. That's spreading the gospel.
It really is good. Some happy memories are like in Cleveland outside the ballroom there, playing in the snow after the gig.
Really?
Yeah, fresh snow, middle of winter, probably January or late January.
Mm.
And the lake frozen as far as you could see. But we played a gig. We were still buzzing. The cricket bat came out. We were in the snow sliding around trying to field the ball.
Incredible.
We also attempted to play in, I think it was Atlanta, maybe, in a car park in Atlanta, and we might have been getting a little bit exuberant. And here's the thing about American cricket rookies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They think they have to smack the cover off it every time it comes towards them.
No test cricket culture.
No, there's no
gentle leaves.
They live for the next ball,
yeah,
like it's their last, and it possibly will be. And they might just hit the ball across the car park and hit someone's car, and that person might yell at you.
Mm.
And when they turn to leave, they might just lift up the back of their shirt to show you what they are carrying, as if they are going to shoot you for hitting their car with your tennis ball in a parking lot cricket match, which is just, it's a perspective on the world that I'll never understand.
Yeah,
the sense of priorities, the sense of what's important in life is just out the window.
It's incredible. I mean, I would be afraid of literally bumping into any person in the United States of America, because statistically speaking, it's maybe 50-50 that they'll shoot you thereabouts.
At that point, it's perhaps 50-50 that they're carrying a gun, and perhaps like 1 in 100 might have left the safety off, bump into them and sever an artery. Those are real stats.
Yeah.
Correct me, Simon Day.
Yeah.
Come at me. Those are real numbers.
We should probably talk about the game as it actually happened last night. And to be honest, I thought it was enthralling.
Yeah. A really good half a day of cricket. Really, really good.
Yeah.
We had a great, like, a absolutely perplexing start where the Black Caps were carted at for 4 or 5 runs and over for quite a long time before some semblance of control could come back.
Well, both Rohit Sharma and Shubman Gill are kind of in the team because they can really motor when they need to. And there was something just off about the way that Southee especially was bowling. I mean, his swing was... I know that swing is very difficult to control, but it was quite inconsistent. There was a lot down the leg side that didn't really move the way he wanted it to. Other ones starting outside off and ending up way outside off, and no danger there either. It felt a little bit like India could have lost the game in that first session, and they couldn't have won the game in the first session, but they definitely, definitely didn't lose it.
They nearly, I think, battered New Zealand's hopes, they very nearly dealt a big mental blow in that first morning.
Yeah.
I think Southee usually gets away with this sort of thing. Like he does have a long leash, and the Black Caps allow him to kind of attempt to swing the ball in any conditions.
Mm.
And if a few balls go down leg side, then... No, no comeback from Kane. So, this does happen to Southee, but it's very rare that he bowls enough bad balls during that process of working it out that he goes for that kind of runs, for those kind of runs. And it was quite shocking, but I think it was good to see Kane be proactive. Like, I think he made quite an early first change.
Yeah, Jamieson came on, I think, in the 10th over or thereabouts. And yeah, normally Southee and Bolt do about 6 or 7 each. So
yeah. And it's a fine line, but I think you bring Jamieson on, you bring him on because he's opened the bowling when Bolt was out.
He
knows what to do. He's still, you know, Kane kept an aggressive field, and when Jamieson came on, he didn't put a cover sweeper out for 2 overs, I think. So there was a full 2 overs of kind of
have a go.
Have a go, we'll throw everything at them. And it definitely worked to slow the run rate down. So I think occasionally I'm critical of Kane for kind of safe captaincy, to put it charitably. But I think in this case he did exactly the right thing.
Well, he kept a third slip in place until the ball happened to come to. And as it was, it was Tim Southee who caught it beautifully. But
a screamer, yeah.
I was watching that at the time, and I kind of didn't quite click that he had taken the catch. For some reason, the reaction of the players was really odd.
There's something about his size as well. Tim Southee, he's just such a big guy. But then he moved quite a long way, and it's just... It challenges your perception of the events when someone that big moves that fast to do a thing like that.
Yeah. And I think it was probably one of those days as well where against almost any other team in the world, there would have probably been half a dozen more chances that went up, except for some reason... the Indian batsmen were just mentally tougher than anyone the Black Caps have come up against recently.
Yeah, I think it's I think we saw from today that these two teams will compete. But we also saw, that India are going to be a strong challenge. I think, even Australia, outside of perhaps Australia, they don't have this kind of mental toughness. There was a certain, I think it was especially Rohit Sharma, just was carrying himself in a way that I felt was an extension of Virat Kohli's quite frustrating minimization of this event as something special.
Rohit Sharma looked very chill.
He was quite chill.
Quite smiley.
He was smiley. He was joking with Neil Wagner. It was like he just, when at the crease, he just had that kind of knees slightly bent, shoulders relaxed, his whole posture, his whole mannerisms were just, I'm in control, I could be here all day. And it looked like he might be there all day. And the chat between me and my cricket watching friends at the time was, what if we don't take any wickets?
What if it got to that point, has it ever happened? Like,
what if India declare 650 for none?
Yeah, it did. There was actually a really, I think it was well after the first drinks break that the first wicket fell, and that first hour was very much like
scary stuff. I think Bolt sort of turned it on, I think for the change to Jamieson made a world of difference in that moment, but I think Bolt was getting it right by the end of that spell and becoming equally challenging, which was great to see because he was maybe not that threatening in the second match against England.
Do you think there would have been more or less threat if they had been playing a spinner?
I think the correct team was selected. I think I don't think the Black Caps would have used a spinner
at all yesterday.
Knowing Kane Williamson's captaincy and knowing knowing what the Black Caps like to do with a ball that is obviously swinging in swinging conditions.
Mm.
You know,
well, it's still swinging by the 55th over or something like that.
Yeah.
So,
this Dukes ball does seem to go a long time, and there's no team in the world that will get more purchase out of good swinging conditions. So I think we can expect it to swing almost, it seems to, there seems to be sort of 10 or 15 quite dead overs just before you get a new one.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's prime Neil Wagner time.
Actually, yeah, no, it is. It absolutely is. And he definitely wasn't overused yesterday. He'll have plenty in the tank to come in quite hot for the first session of, oh God, I'm trying to think of the time in my head, from, you know, 9:30 to 11:30 or thereabouts.
Yeah.
He will be steaming in with a kind of rugged old ball in his hands and
his preferred weapon.
Yeah, yeah. I just wonder though, because the pitch for a day one pitch, footmarks wise, it was looking like shit.
It looked ragged.
It looked
that is
horrible.
Really worrying.
Yeah, and Jadeja, R. Ashwin,
No, I don't. I am not anticipating enjoying watching New Zealand middle orders sort of struggle through against those two. I really just hope we're good enough. I think we just have to be good enough against those two.
Mm.
The three seamers that they've picked, I reckon they've missed a trick with leaving out the B bowler that turned out to be Australia's undoing.
Oh, Mohammad Siraj.
Mohammad Siraj.
Yeah. No,
because
he is,
New Zealand
he's
hasn't
fantastic,
seen him
yeah.
bowl. You know, we've not played him. We've played Bumrah a lot, and I think New Zealand batsman, he will be a handful. He always is, but he's not the weapon he sometimes has been against New Zealand.
Yeah.
I think somehow we've kind of worked out a way to deal with his magic tricks.
He's got a bit of almost like Jofra Archer about him, I think, in that he doesn't always look like he's going to be super lethal coming in. But every once in a while we'll just have a miracle day where he will take five or six and
be unplayable.
But yeah, I guess you're spinning the wheel a little bit with that. But I mean, I think we're probably conditioned by having seen, various tours of Ishant Sharma being quite poor. We're probably conditioned to underestimating how good he could be in these conditions, I think. I mean, he could have three wickets by the time his first spell is finished when the Black Caps get into bat.
I think you're right. He's still menacing, and he's in somewhat of a comeback period for his career as well. Mm. Even just talking about domestic cricket by the looks of, well, you know, franchised cricket by the looks of things, I think he's had a real strong run into this match. So he will be dangerous. I think both sides have picked their best teams, I think that is hard for India because they have such depth. And it's actually pretty hard for the Black Caps right now as well
our
depth.
Yeah.
But I do think that the, for a one-off match with very unknown conditions, lots of players on either side that have played each other before. I think no one tried to game the system. Neither team tried to game the system. Neither team tried to win the match with their player selection.
Yeah.
Both teams have chosen to put their best cricketers man for man on the cricket pitch and try to win the match out there in the middle.
Yeah, it was curious that that India basically had no interest in changing their lineup, even though they got a whole extra day of the ground getting soaked and just getting everything getting greener and greener.
To the extent that they announced their team the night before, giving the Black Caps all the time in the world to do their prep. Whereas we showed a ruthlessness that I don't think New Zealand teams ever show outside of possibly the All Blacks, and the All Blacks don't even need to be ruthless in this way because they're just bigger and better than most other teams.
Yeah.
But New Zealand choosing to withhold their selection until the last possible moment, the kind of dying hours before the toss was finally taken, I feel like there must have been some, I'm congratulating the selections because I, you know, that's my view, but I feel like there must have been some conditionality around the Black Caps selection. They must have been seriously considering running Ajaz instead of Colin.
Yeah, I would say so, definitely. Because, I think it would have been entirely condition dependent if... because going into the game, Southampton had been a venue that had a bit of a reputation for spin. So if that had have been how the game ended up, the conditions the game was being played in, I'm sure he would have played, especially after performing pretty well in that second test.
He did. I really liked watching him bowl.
It is unfortunate for him, and I think it's going to be a little bit of the story of Patel's test career, where he is he's probably going to spend a very, very long time as New Zealand's first choice test spinner. It's just that that means shit in New Zealand conditions, and in most of the places that we tour, that kind of means shit there as well.
Yeah, there's some interesting tours overseas coming up where he might get some really good game time.
I think
he might be one of those players where he, if he got a tour in the right part of the world where he was selected for the first game, played a blinder and took 5 wickets, then he'll basically have to be selected for the second game. And perhaps we even get a 3-test series and he plays 3 tests in a row. And that might be enough to get him almost full-time selection. If he got 3 good games in a row where he took a lot of wickets, it might be enough to kind of convince New Zealand. But Colin has just been such a solid performer. And with so many international teams struggling to find decent all-rounders, New Zealand having one
helps.
There to go, you basically, you pick him. And, Ajaz, I don't know what conditions, if they're not going to pick him for Southampton, what conditions do they have to have in order to select him over Colin?
Maybe subcontinent or nothing.
Basically, I think that's what we've learned.
I would quite like to make a bit of a shout out to the radio commentary, actually, which I did an hour after lunch of listening to it rather than watching it. I was kind of curious as to how it was going to go on Gold AM, which is kind of a rebrand of what used to be Radio Sport before
that
station.
Is it like a pop-up channel, or does this exist?
No, Gold AM's... so there's a station called Gold, which is a rebrand of one of NZME's music stations. I want to say Coast or...
Sure.
You know, one of those easy listening stations. But they've also got this AM frequency that they do live sport on. It was almost entirely the exact same Radio Sport commentary team that used to do every summer of cricket year after year after year. You know, you had Waddle and Coney and Malcolm Jordan doing play-by-play, Peter McGlashan on sort of incidental comments. It was lovely to have them back.
Did they have good,
to be honest,
good stats? Good stats updates throughout.
Yeah, reasonably good from memory. Aforementioned Mushbrain. I can't remember any off the top of my head, but
I would have enjoyed listening to Waddle, I think.
Yeah, there was something familiar about it. When you start to get into that sort of the sleep deprived fugue state, as it were, there was something very comforting. And
then Coney just comes in and snaps you out of it.
Actually,
or was
from memory,
quite sedate?
I can't actually remember a single thing Jeremy Coney said all night. So maybe he wasn't even in it. Who knows?
I find him sometimes. He polarizes me against myself. I enjoy him, and then I just cringe. But you know, a bit of cringe goes a long way.
Sport
needs to be sillier. So good on you, Coney.
But what I thought was really interesting about it is the audio picture that was painted by the broadcast made it was a much more intense sounding proposition.
Well, it was an intense passage of play.
It was. That first hour after lunch would have been intense whether I was watching or listening to it, definitely. But the way that they got the crowd noise and made that a very big part of the kind of overall ambient the mix, I suppose, was really good. And the way that, I mean, Malcolm Jordan especially is very good at it. He's very pacey, you know, he's very upbeat. And
do you think they had stump microphones to add to that? Were you hearing ball and bat and that sort of thing as well as the crowd?
You don't hear specific, you don't really hear comments, but you do hear chirping.
I wish we heard more of the on-field chat.
Oh,
and I know that they have it, like they, because sometimes they turn it up.
Sometimes
there's moments when they turn those microphones up. Usually it's when play is at its most boring and you just want to hear a little bit of like, come on to me from BJ back there. They turn those microphones up when no one's talking, but I think they're too different to the players in their treatment of those microphones. Mm. In my opinion, these are professional sports people. They shouldn't say anything on the pitch that they're not willing for us to hear.
Mm.
And I want to hear them.
Mm. Absolutely, because I think some. I mean, I think some of the players genuinely probably have pretty intelligent and insightful things to say about what's going on in the moment. And even if it is a sledge or some sort, you know, I think probably you could add a lot of value by just hearing what the players have to say about what's going on.
Yeah, I don't think I'd take it quite as far. You know, you sometimes see the classic sort of Black Caps Brains Trust huddle of maybe Kane, Ross and Tom Latham, sometimes BJ. So, you know, you could almost include the whole team. I think this is a very, very strategically switched on team. But I wouldn't go as far as to kind of put microphones on the players.
Mm.
And
when they're actively mic'd up, there's probably something psychological about it. Like if you're wearing a wire for like an organized crime sting or something, then you'd really struggle to not talk in terms of like, hello, fellow criminals. Like, what crimes are we planning today? If you had players mic'd up all the time, I think they'd be so aware of it that you'd lose all sense of candidness and naturalness. But if you just leave the stump mics turned up all the time,
I know.
Who knows what's going to be said?
What is Wagner always talking to the umpires about? You know, in fact, everyone talks to Wagner all the time, and just
maybe they're just trying to ingratiate themselves with him. Like the batsmen are just like, "Hey, bro, you know that's you're bowling you know really nice there. Just keep on pitching it up. Just keep swinging it, please."
It has worked. He has bowled few bounces this series so far.
Yeah. Was it
by his standards?
I think it might have been Wagner or maybe Jameson who really got would have been Pujara. I think really got him with a good bouncer.
Yeah, I think it was Jameson right on the grill.
Yeah,
the ball very nearly hit the stumps as it came down.
It did actually,
and which would have been quite an amazing wicket. You don't see a kind of physical wicket like that very often these days.
But it did seem that was the immediate aftermath of that. Jameson didn't say anything from memory. He just gave a very, very hard stare, and it was sort of, it was a bit unusual to see that sort of thing from New Zealand quick bowler.
Jameson has a streak that I'm not sure how to feel about. He's so competitive.
He's very competitive.
Outwardly, overtly, demonstratively, performatively competitive. You know, like he wants to be taking the wickets of the best players in the world, and he shows it on the cricket field every time he goes out there. And I love to watch him bowl, but as a uptight Kiwi. I feel a little bit uncomfortable about
something slightly off about it.
Yeah.
Still. We should probably start wrapping up there because we've talked for a long, long time.
About like half a day of cricket.
What if we had had a full day? Yeah, imagine. What are you going to be watching it tonight? Are you settling in for the whole game?
I think as I said, my hopes are somewhat dashed for this game. Like, I just don't know how much good quality cricket we're going to have with this weather. Like, I really will struggle to stay up during rain delays, I think.
Absolutely, yeah. Previously,
I would have been all about it and I would have found a way and powered through. But just the sheer amount of time that it looks like we're going to lose. I think I'll be there waiting until a good midnight, half past midnight.
I think if something happens. Any morning session being washed out, though. I mean, I already feel like shit from the the tiredness. So any washout, it's all over, I think, for me.
I think that might be too much for me as well. If I felt like a pivotal part of the game was going to happen later, then I couldn't see myself staying up.
Maybe the final day or a chase for the win.
I kind of don't think any passage of play would be that pivotal, because I kind of don't think we'll get a full match
result
in. But that's just my deep negativity setting in, and it's just, you know, like I said, I'll be there hoping for good weather and following it. So
need to fly a fleet of helicopters over Southampton or something to disperse the cloud. I'm not sure if that actually works or not, if it's maybe just what they do to dry the pitch when it's been raining too much. But
we'll throw everything at it.
Yeah.
The helicopters, climate change, reversing particles in the air.
Those experimental heat-based weapons, you know, just fire that at the clouds. Who knows? Just try everything.
Or just extend it by a couple more days, guys.
Yeah, you got to day 6, why not day 8? Why not? Just do it. Thank you so much, Jonathan Pierce.
Thanks, Alex.
For sitting in and for producing us for quite a few episodes now, actually. And thank you to the Beer Spot, of course, as well. 5 locations across Auckland. Thank you to the spin-off members. And if you want to get all of these off-spin episodes when they come out each morning, I would highly advise you subscribe to it.
Talo for Lover. I'm Madeline Chapman, editor at The Spin-Off. If you have the means, consider supporting our high-quality journalism by becoming a Spin-Off member. Sign up now at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
Kia ora e te iwi, Te Aihe Butler here, podcast manager at The Spin-Off. If you enjoy listening to our podcasts, consider supporting our mahi by signing up to become a Spin-Off member at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
The Spin-Off Podcast Network.